You're listening to the podcast of the Attention Young Choreographer Series 2024. Artistic Direction, Brianna O'Mara and Chris Haring. The series is co-funded by the European Union in the frame of Lifelong Burning, Futures Lost and Found. Today's guest is Sua Ratsifandrianna, a Franco-Malagasy dancer and choreographer based in Brussels. With author Sean Pfeiffer, she talks about presenting her solo piece Groove at Impulstanz. The work entangles different aspects of her personal as well as dance heritage, playing with the tension between history and momentary presence.
Hi, Sua. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. I can imagine it's been like a quite intense couple of days, but maybe that's the usual, I don't know. I saw you actually in Fase last year at Impulstanz, at Volkstheater, where we're recording right now. And I was extremely impressed just like by the precision and by the energy. And then I was very glad to hear that you're part of Attention and that I was going to get to talk to you. Also quite intimidated, actually. And that hasn't changed after yesterday when I saw your solo. But yeah, I want to perhaps start with the beginning because your piece starts in complete silence and darkness. There's actually like a complete blackout, which is almost rare, I think, for contemporary performance. Currently, it's a very theatrical choice in a way. It takes a long time for the lights to come up, even longer for the music to like properly set in. And the piece is called Groove, and it's a lot about the music and also like the lack thereof. But I want to talk about lighting first. How did this decision come about, and does it affect your dancing, the darkness?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, when we created this show, so the two last week of residency was with the light designer, Marie-Christine Soma. And I told her that what I wanted is to have like a complete silence, complete darkness. So then we are on the same level of attention also with the audience. And then we build up slowly the mechanism of the piece. But it takes a while. So then we are in the same rhythm, we are in the same breath also. And so for me to install this atmosphere, I needed to have silence and darkness at first. So then we can go and follow the same story together. Because otherwise, if I would have started with something right away, it would have had another meaning. Also because when, as an audience, as a spectator, somehow, when we come to the theater, we can, we can have like multiple things in our head. And so it's nice to go and start slowly to, yeah, just get into it. And it also helps for me physically to start with this idea.
It was the second show I saw yesterday, and I had been working like for 8 hours before that, and I was like really like tired, and I went into it, and then I became like really awake in a way, even though it was totally dark and silent. Then it starts, like the lights come up a little bit, and we start to see like your silhouette, and I was like really like captivated and like focused on what I could see. And it takes a while until we see your face for the first time, and then it becomes really expressive. And with this darkness, there's also, like you said, like a silence, but you already talked about a rhythm that you share with the audience. Like there is no music, but like watching you, I had a feeling like there is some music that you're moving to that we don't hear, that perhaps you hear in your head. Maybe you don't. Maybe that's a projection. Maybe what I'm asking is there like a silent groove that you find? Maybe it's an esoteric question. I don't know. But.
Yeah. No, not at all. It's a very good question, actually. It's very different every day. But since I have like a choreography and I have images in which I go through. So when you talk about the rhythm, it's about the rhythm also of the breath, the rhythm of the body, of the movement. And I wanted to start with the rhythm of the dance before starting because it's about groove, it's about feeling, it's about togetherness. But yeah, it was important for me to also give space for the body to get into itself and then start to interact first with the audience, to interact with the movements, to interact also with the mind and all the images that I have in my head, and then with the music that comes in second time.
In your texts, you describe groove as a form of anticipation, like a form of anticipating the rhythm and the music. And now you said it's a little bit different every time you do it. I was wondering if when you stand there on stage, can you anticipate the music because you know it so well, because you know it by heart, or do you have to find it every night? And like, is it a more organic process? Like, is it just about precision, or are there nights where you like get it and nights where you don't?
Yes, exactly. It's not really about precision. I mean, yeah, of course, there's the precision of the music. And when I say anticipation, it's you can anticipate it as you can play with it and be like have some delay also. It's about this range of time between two notes or between two movements, because I also apply it to dance. And I think it's the this balance that you constantly find within the moment. And that's what it's interesting in the performance, is because that I don't know what's coming next and how my body would react. So I have to be very available and make myself available to catch any kind of signal. It can come from someone who's sneezing, or it can come from a baby, because one day I had a baby, or it can be, I mean, not a baby myself, but a baby in the in the audience who was reacting. Actually, it was in Brussels, and it's so then it does affect what you do. It does affect the way your performativity, it does affect the way you understand the music, the light on that day, the space also that in which you are. There's this proximity with the audience, and you can feel also sometimes the audience breathing or holding the breath. It's really sensitive, and that's what I wanted to find with this piece.
It is a it's not a frontal situation. It's like it's a four wall situation, basically. It has like an almost like an arena feel to it in a way. And there are moments where it feels a bit military, even like you're marching, and then you have the costume that I don't know. I had to think of like American football. But at the same time, there's like there are these moments of attention towards the audience as well, like in the way you're listening to them, perhaps. But there's also the moment where you take off the jacket and you hand it to a person in the audience. I don't know if you do that every night, but I was wondering perhaps how choreographed can this sort of interaction be, or how does like the very precise choreography interact with the with your need to have some kind of freedom and momentary anticipation, not only of the music but of the room around you? Like how do you have like fixed points where you need to go, or is like every inch laid out for you?
It's a bit of both, actually. It's so it's true to have like different stations or different points through time that is choreographed, of course. Also the space, also the way I address my face or interaction with the audience. So for example, this thing, what I have my jacket and I give it to someone in the audience, it's something that I do every night. It's like different steps, like in the video game, actually, when you, okay, I pass this step, and then the second one, and then the third one. But it's true that from one day to another, it's different, because the reception of it or the reaction, actually, there's a lot of permeability. I don't know if this word, yeah. That happens every night because of the person that I have in front, or, yeah, it's really, really different every time. And that's where it's interesting, actually, because otherwise, if it's too precise, I think it's more about letting go. And I have been rehearsing those movements for now. It's been almost 3 years that I performed this piece, so it's really anchored within my body. But the way I'm going to address it will be has to be. That's the goal that I have before I go. It has to be spontaneous and honest. And sometimes I can fail. And sometimes it's a bit like mechanical. But it's about that. It's a psychological thing. Okay, now how can I make it more... how can I say that? More real on the moment. And it's about that.
I want to ask about the development of the piece a little bit, because the music is very central to it, and you could kind of perhaps like cut the piece in half, because there's like two sort of like musical dialogues that happen. And I assume the music wasn't written for the piece, right? You chose it, or how did that collaboration like come about with these two artists?
Yeah, so I worked with Sylvain Darifour, who composed the first music with Glitch Sounds, and the second music is from Alban Morenzi, so he's more from R&B, hip-hop music. And so actually it was a music that got composed for this piece. So it was through the creative process, it was a back and forth with, like it was a constant dialogue with the writing of the choreography and the writing of the music. And somehow they never worked together. I was always with one and then with the other. But it communicates, of course, because when I had to... because it was more like there was a phase of research. But then when it came to have like a development of piece, then in terms of dramaturgy of sound, we worked in some forms that could dialogue between the two compositions. And for example, for the first part, it was like different cells of grooves, but grooves that never got repeated. So it's like a constant, it's constantly pushing forward, forward and forward. And that's why it doesn't sound like something easy for the ear, which is different than in the second part when it just flows and sometimes gets static in one groove that remains. And so it was created with them during the process.
The next thing I would have asked would have been if it felt like two different processes, or if it like merged into one. Like, can you imagine perhaps like a version of the piece where you start with the other musician's work and go into the first? Because there's like a period of maybe like 2 minutes, maybe five, maybe it's less, where there's silence again between the two, and I felt like I could see you going from one feeling to the next, like finding the music that you know is going to come next. So I was wondering perhaps about like that bridge, or how you bridge the two very different sounds.
Actually, when I thought of the piece, since it's my first solo, it's my first piece, actually not my first performance, but I think it's the first time that I gave time to something for myself. The idea is just to answer the simple question of how... So it was in 2021, because now I think the answer would be different if I had to again go through a process and create a piece called Groove. I think it would be different. But when I was there in 2021, the question was, how do I want to dance today, and where I come from, and where do I want to go? So this thing of exchanging the two parts could be done, but actually I think in the mindset that I was before, it was like, okay, I came from abstract dance and contemporary dance, and more, and I took classes of hip-hop and other dances, and also I want to get back also to the Malagasy dance that I could learn when I was a child. Also, I wanted to get back to the source of my feeling and my love for dancing. So I think it was coming from the abstract and precise and lines towards something that is more small but this would be too binary to say that, because it's actually a feeling that I have also while I'm doing the beginning. So it's but yeah, it's so the bridge between the two parts, I think it's just an evolution of the movement, because when I go to the second part, it's just one movement that gets repeated, and it's just that I do very, very small, tiny changes in the movement, in the hip, and then in the shoulder, and then it brings another movement, and then this other movement goes to another movement, and it goes to another dance that I know, and through little changes, then it goes to another dance, and another dance, and another dance, and then it's an accumulation of dances that my body knew at some point in my life, in a party, or when I used to live with my parents at home. So yeah, it's all those things that I travel somehow, that I get through those small changes and through repetition.
Maybe we could talk about that, like personal dance history in a way. Perhaps even like how clear you have the distinctions. I mean, I'm sure you know what you're doing in each moment, but the way like you're collaging them perhaps breaks those lines a bit. Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Afinja Finjao, it's a dance from the 19th century that used to be that is still danced in Madagascar, and also in the diaspora of Malagasy people around the world. For myself, I was born and raised in France, but in Toulouse, where I grew up in south of France, I was often when I was a child. Attending celebrations of the Malagasy diaspora, and it's true that Finja Finja was a dance that we used to practice, and somehow I, through the years, because I went to an academic school, I have a contemporary background, I kind of forgot a bit those dances, and for me it was when I got about 24 years old, I was like, oh, I miss that. Like, I was really separating the dances that somehow belong to the stage, which are more modern dance and all this history, and all the dances that maybe are more in the counterculture and that are a bit put aside. And so I wanted to bring them together and do like a mashup of things, and just, yeah, with the composition of the music and the light, play with that. Play with those dances, but why I'm dancing, when I'm dancing the dance itself in the moment, sometimes it can just like last 2 seconds and then it gets transformed to get it into another dance. So for myself as a performer, it's okay, now I'm dancing Afinja Finjao, for instance, how can I reconnect with the feeling I had before when I used to dance this piece? And then, okay, and then I'm going to move on and I'm going to dance something else. Ah, okay, now it's the Madison, which was the first dance that I've learned when I was a child. Okay, and now I'm going to move again and I'm going to quote something else. So it's all those memories that you bring in the moment and that you're trying to get through in an honest way.
And we talked about the costume choice a little bit, but I would be interested how the collaboration with Coco Petitpierre.
Yeah.
When the costume came in, what does it do with your physicality, perhaps?
Yeah. So the jacket, actually, the first image, the first silhouette that you see for the first part, it was based on images of Ghost in the Shell, so the animated movie, not the one with Scarlett Johansson from 2017, but yeah, obviously. So no, it's the one before, and yeah, and when I used to be a teenager, I was like, oh my god, I want to be this, I want to be this when I grow up, and yeah, and when I talked about it with Coco, she was like, okay, but then let's do it. Have fun. I mean, I wanted to have this. So yeah, then she drew the costume. And then when it comes to the second layer, which is a t-shirt with two colors, there's one with green, with some green, red, yellow and dark touch, and yeah, it's more. It makes me think of the tapestry in Madagascar, and there's an orange color with the glitters, and it's more yeah, extravaganza. I don't know. It's more the yeah, a color that I like with glitters. I wanted that too. So it's like the two colors that go together, and the shorts as well, and the shoes, which are jazz shoes. And on top of that, like shisu, the same fabric that I have on my jacket and on my shorts.
I mean, you've been touring the piece for a while, I think. And maybe I just want to ask, like, what have you been working on since, like, for like on your solo work, and how did it come out of Groove? How does like Groove sit in your history as a dancer, perhaps, or like what did it make possible in a way?
Yeah, I think with this piece, I gained confidence. I think in writing, in performing, also, and. Because sometimes when I used to be a performer for other companies before, I think, I don't know, it takes a while to have confidence in your ideas. And I think with Groove and with the tour, I started to want to continue experiencing other things. And since I have like a very... like a strong relationship with the music. That's why I wanted to work with composers. Then I pursued somehow this research. And not so long ago, I have released a radio creation, actually. I went to Madagascar in May last year. And this radio creation is linked to a new show that came out actually 2 months ago in Brussels for the Kunsten Festival des Arts, and in this piece it's really musical as well. It's actually, there's a lot of connection with Groove, but the different thing is that I wanted to get out of the mute body, so we use also we talk also on stage, we sing, yeah. So that's how my material got developed somehow, and also it went in discussion with the collaborators that I have on stage, because we are four on stage with one musician and two other dancers, performers. So, and yeah, it somehow digs more this research that I have about the diasporic identity also in Europe, with the desire also to create a bridge with my origin island, Madagascar. So yeah, I think Groove somehow was some kind of bridge to gain confidence, and then to push forward the expression also, and find different ways also to express myself.
Lastly, like coming back to your shows here, like you've done it twice now, I think, and you're going to do it a third time tonight. What's the feeling you're taking into this last show? Like, is there anything like you feel like you haven't done in that space with that piece?
Since I've been very busy with the last show with Fompita Fompit Fompitan that we did in Brussels, I didn't perform Groove for 4 months. So I think the first show in Vienna was about to get back to the piece, to keep it alive, to not be like too obsessed with what I used to do and the way that I used to dance it, because my body changed, and yeah, so it was about that. The second one was more about also because we went out also until 4 in the morning, so so it was like, okay, But it's okay because it's a 45-minute piece, so it was about to keep it up and to still playful about that. And I think about tonight, it's at 11 p.m. I think it's the first time that I perform at that time, at that moment. I'm a bit scared for the audience because I'm like, the beginning in silence. Some of them will fall asleep for sure, but it's fine. It's okay. Nothing for tonight is just to have fun. It's to have fun. It's to because I was really happy with the two previous performances. I had lots of fun. I was very happy to get back also to the solo, to get back to my body, to my little obsessions. And I think tonight is just to go through it and see what comes out of it.
Yeah, thank you very much. I wish you all the best for tonight. And thank you for talking to me and taking the time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much for your questions.
You have been listening to the Attention Young Choreographers Series podcast. To never miss a new episode, follow us on Spotify, Podcast Addict, or Deezer. For more artist conversations, visit our websites lifelongburning.eu and impulsedance.com.